اكتب واخط بالقلم بالقلم اكتب واخط بالقلم دموع من عيني دموع من عيني يا ناس مالي حدا يا ناس مالي حدا بهمي وعسيني.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is MJ Rosenberg, who is a special correspondent to the Washington Spectator and a regular contributor to the Huffington Post. He worked on Capitol Hill for various Democratic members of the House and Senate for 15 years and previously served as the director of policy analysis for the Israel Policy Forum and was an editor of Near East Report, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee's APAC's biweekly publication on Middle East policy. Welcome to Background Briefing, MJ Rosenberg.
Thank you, Ian.
And there's quite a lot to talk about, MJ. Specifically, I wanted to talk to you about how the president's going to get this vote. There's obviously a disconnect between the Congress and the people, and the Congress people are hearing from their constituents who are extremely upset and quite vocal that they oppose this war. And somehow the president has got to navigate between the Republican House, many of whom just simply hate him and would vote against him to hurt his credibility, which is on the line. My understanding is that the only hope that the president has is AIPAC, the so-called Israel lobby, that are rounding up the votes.
Yeah, I think it is the only hope that that the administration has to win is the pressure that AIPAC can bring on members of Congress, specifically by threatening to, withhold campaign funds if the member of Congress votes the wrong way. I don't think it's going to work. I think that the proposal is going to fail in the House. Many of AIPAC's own supporters in the House, many of them are going to vote no. I noticed that Alan Grayson of Florida, who is, about as AIPAC as you can get, is heading up the effort to get a no vote on this. And he said, he had an interesting quote. Grayson was asked about AIPAC, and again, he's an AIPAC guy, and he said, AIPAC is irrelevant when the people speak. That's usually not true, but the fact is the people don't speak that often in as clear a voice as they are right now with members of, running, 90 to 10, 95 to 5 in congressional offices against this. So I think, the fact is members of Congress, I worked there for 20 years. Their main concern, almost virtually their only concern, is getting reelected. If going with AIPAC is not going to help them get reelected, but it's going to hurt their chances of getting reelected, they're not going to go with AIPAC. So I see this as just a disaster for AIPAC as well as for the administration. I can't imagine that the president can turn this around.
And in spite of the fact that the House Majority Leader Eric Cantor and the Democratic Majority Whip Steny Hoyer, both AIPAC partisans who are cracking the whip?
Well, it's funny. Hoyer and Cantor are as much AIPAC as if they were staff of AIPAC. They're leaders, but these days, members of Congress are pretty resistant to their own leadership. We see that on a host of issues. So I don't, I can't see it. We're close to 218, which is the majority, members of the House already saying flat out that they are going to vote no. They're not at 218. They're not there yet. They're just under it. But once they flat out say it, that means Obama, they might as well not schedule a vote because he's going to lose. Unless, of course, his speech, Tuesday, I think, Obama's speech is so persuasive that it, kind of the way Ronald Reagan used to be or, JFK or FDR, that he turns votes around. But I don't think any of them ever turned a vote around that looks so overwhelmingly negative from their point of view.
Well, clearly the president got a heavy lift. Now, you mentioned Grayson. He wrote a piece in the New York Times arguing that he would vote. He's prepared to vote no now, but he was very unsatisfied with the intelligence that was provided. And apparently they're going to try and do a better job on providing the administration providing intelligence. They've also released some videotapes of the people that were gassed. This is all taking time. I mean, there's so much hyperbole involved. First of all, they call this a war. You know, what they're talking about is not a war. It's just some sort of weird symbolic use of cruise missiles. But maybe, right. You know, I've explored the possibility with the two previous guests that what the real agenda is here is regime decapitation. What the consequences of that would be. But you've got the UN vote coming up at the end of the week and the House vote at the end of the week, the Senate political vote earlier. There's plenty of time here to build a case if you get the world on your side, which so far is not happening.
I agree. If the United Nations comes around, there's a vote that's in our favor, and it would no longer be a unilateral or a mostly unilateral U.S. action. And I suppose it's possible that would change. That would certainly change enough Democrats. Obviously, Republicans don't change because of anything the U.N. does or doesn't do. But and as far as evidence why it's hard to believe that they would wait to the last minute before they would present definitive evidence. I mean, the president and the administration understand that once members of Congress announce their position, it's very hard for them to turn back and go the other way. Seems to me if they have really concrete evidence, they would have used it already. One more point I want to make is the thing about the AIPAC involvement. They are really they are supporting this not because, I shouldn't say supporting it. They are pushing for this authorization to bomb Syria, not because of Syria, but because they want the United States to be in a position to go to war with Iran over the nuclear issue when the time comes. If they lose this vote, which means if the president loses this vote, it will make it look, it'll be very unlikely that the United States would be able to go to war. In the case of Iran, it would be go to war because we're probably talking regional conflagration over Iran. So the stakes are huge in this battle.
Well, it's extraordinary how little reference there is to AIPAC. I believe the New York Times did refer to them trying to whip up the vote for Obama, and then retract it or delete the reference to AIPAC?
The Times had a piece, I think it was last Sunday. It appeared Sunday night, and they had an administration official, unnamed, saying that AIPAC was the 800-pound gorilla. That was the phrase that was used that would help, put the administration on the winning side of this. And by the next day, that the story was still there, but the whole part about the gorilla and AIPAC's role was gone.
Right. Well,
it's just, this is a very typical thing. I noticed on MSNBC, which has the nerve to occasionally hint at the existence of the lobby, they will do it without saying AIPAC, or when they say AIPAC, without defining what AIPAC is. I mean, this is this is an area that you don't see nearly as much about it as you should, because people are afraid to talk about it.
Right, and in today's in Sunday's New York Times, of course, there's a very big front page article about the history of Syria's chemical arsenal, which is entirely due to Israel's nuclear bomb. They built this massive chemical weapons arsenal as a poor man's deterrent against a nuclear weapon. Never a mention of that. I mean, it's extraordinary the how the 800-pound gorillas disappear.
Yeah, I mean, it is. The most powerful country in the Middle East is Israel. And the way this whole everything's portrayed in the American media and to a large extent in the European media as well is that Israel is like the poor, the poor little David of the David Goliath story, surrounded by all these scary Goliaths that could do anything at any time. Israel has, it said that, around 200 nuclear weapons. The no other country in the Middle East has nuclear weapons at all. And obviously countries around Israel want to have nuclear weapons, and that includes Iran too, which isn't right on the borders, because they want to have it as a form of deterrence, not to use it, more like the way the U.S. and the Soviet Union both wanted nuclear weapons, as you know, to defend against using them. But that's never talked about. Israel right now can do whatever it wants in the Middle East. If it decides to bomb Lebanon tomorrow or Syria, and it did not long ago bomb a kind of a rudimentary Syrian nuclear reactor that was built for the Syrians by the North Koreans, it just does it. And, you know, or when it wants to, you know, bomb Gaza, there have been two wars in the last decade, where Israel, mm-hmm. not really wars, Israeli onslaughts against Gaza killed, you know, a couple of thousand people. Israel does it. Nobody could tell them not to do it. And the United States supports it. And the United States says nothing about the fact that Israel uses chemical weapons in Gaza, like we're used, phosphorus, to provide a smoke cover for its, you know, for troop movements and whatever. I mean, it's a double standard completely, and it's kind of outrageous.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, MJ Rosenberg.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with MJ Rosenberg, who's a special correspondent to The Washington Spectator and a regular contributor to The Huffington Post. He worked on Capitol Hill for various Democratic members of the House and Senate for 15 years.